The Dead Side of the Mic by Simon Brett, dramatized by Jeremy Front.
Why is that customs woman looking at me?
Don't be so paranoid.
I'm authority intolerant. Even at school, the prefects were always out to get me.
Charles Paris, the captor of the Lower Sea.
The unexpected death of Francis's mother led to a hurriedly arranged trip to New York for the funeral, and as our daughter was heavily pregnant, the BBC drama rep gave me time off to accompany my semi-estranged wife across the pond.
I've never been good with the man.
She's not a man.
Debatable with that moustache.
Funerals aside, I was hoping to sniff around and find out what I could about Danny Klinger, a New York music producer who was recently found dead in a London car park.
I need a drink.
You're supposed to be here to lend me support, not the other way round.
Klinger's death seemed to be linked to that of Annie Gower, a studio manager whose body I discovered in a BBC editing suite.
I'm no good at flying.
You don't have to be.
Annie was full of sleeping pills before her wrists were slashed. Klinger was similarly drugged before he was asphyxiated in a hire car.
I need a drink.
You'll have to wait.
Annie had just returned from New York.
I badly need a drink.
I just hoped death wasn't catching.
Relax.
I can't relax when I'm being eyed up by a member of the Stasi.
Please and change in the tray, madam, then step through the metal detector.
See you on the other side of the wall.
Keys and change in the tray, then step through, sir. Step over here and raise your arms, please, sir. Would you mind removing your belt?
Flying's not stressful enough. Now I have to undress in public.
He's a nervous traveller.
We have to go through these checks for everyone's safety. Now, if you wouldn't mind opening your bag... What's in the bottle?
What's it look like?
An unidentified yellowish liquid.
Have a guess. The label says bells.
The label could say anything.
For God's sake, do I look like an international terrorist?
We don't allow liquids in the cabin.
It's whiskey. What am I going to do, flambé the pilot?
Charles!
Well, really, I bet they served scotch on board.
Only if it's passed through our security system.
Well, I can't get on a plane unless this has passed through my system.
Those are the rules.
We haven't got time. Our plane's
been called. Is there anything to stop me taking it on board inside me?
Providing it doesn't affect your behaviour towards the cabin crew.
Right, then. Down the hatch.
Oh, God.
Look, Francis, the Flatiron Building.
Yes.
Yeah. It's really like the movies.
You've packed up.
Look, cool cops in cool cop uniforms.
How much coffee did you have on the flight?
It's like being in Annie Hall. Oh, man, the Chrysler Building.
Actually, it's the Empire State.
Since we left London, Frances had been the one in control. But in the quiet of a hotel room, she lost her composure and crumpled.
I don't know how I'm going to get through the next 24 hours.
I know, but you will.
I'm dreading it.
I'll be there. We'll do it together. If you want me to stay with you tonight...
Oh, thanks for the offer, but...
I'm not trying to take advantage.
I know.
Think of me as a crutch. Let me rephrase that.
Now, at last I had the chance to be a rock in Francis's hour of need and maybe to redeem myself in her eyes.
Hello? Juliet!
It's Juliet!
Hello, darling.
Yes, we're fine.
And she was back in control as she'd been all the years I was pissed and screwing around.
No, he wasn't too...
So much for the rock. So, I did what I always do when regret and guilt rear their ugly twin heads. I hit the minibar.
Yes.
Hi, Morris. It's Charles.
Oh, dance?
Paris.
Are you an extremist?
No.
Any?
No.
Have you been arrested?
No.
Then why the hell are you ringing me at 4:30 in the bloody morning?
I forgot about the time difference.
Since when were Highgate and St. John's Wood in different time zones?
I'm in New York.
You're drunk and hallucinating.
No, I really am in New York. Francis's mum died. I've come over for the funeral.
Oh, I didn't realise.
No, it was very sudden.
I'm sorry. Give her my condolences.
Of course.
Is that why you phoned me at 4 in the morning?
No. I wanted to have a chat.
Right.
About where my life's going.
Oh, no.
Or at least my career.
Oh, God.
I know I'm jet-lagged and I was up late drinking bourbon, but I've been giving things a lot of thought and I think I've reached a watershed.
Is this to do with approaching grandparenthood?
No. Well, yeah. Maybe. The thing is, what with Juliet about to give birth and Angela dying. I feel like I've moved up a step on the escalator of life, and I'm next in line, mortality-wise.
Sounds like Peter Pan's just come down to Earth with a bump.
This is about remembrance.
Oh, don't go all Proustian on me at 4:30 in the morning.
All right, it's about my legacy.
Now you sound like Tony Blair.
I don't want my grandchild thinking Grandpa's some kind of cheap variety term.
Vanity, vanity, all is vanity.
Morris, when I've finished on the rep, I want to do something with a bit of kudos.
Well, I could try the National again. Hope Nick Heintner doesn't bear a grudge.
Preferably something that pays well.
So when you say kudos, you mean money?
And profile. Remember that youth sitcom I was offered for BBC Three?
The one that would get you, and I quote, typecast, yeah, saying, doddery old geezers like Arnold Ridley.
Or maybe I overreacted.
That's the dear old doddery Arnold Ridley, who enjoyed a long and hugely successful career
Morris.
The greatly missed and much-loved star of Dad's Army. One of the most successful sitcoms in the history of television.
Okay. If they're still interested, I am prepared to play a comedy incontinent granddad.
And you want me to go grovelling back to the funky young funsters at BBC Three?
I wouldn't ask you to grovel for me. I'm asking you to grovel for the next generation.
How can I deny the next generation? Well, if that's all, I need a few hours' sleep before I start uber-schmoozing.
Yeah.
The funeral was a bittersweet affair. Part commemoration of a life past, part celebration of a life lived. The kind of ceremony I'd like for myself, some bloody hope. Francis made a moving eulogy, something else I'd like. And to my relief, Angela didn't rise from her coffin and try to wring the breath from her son-in-law's adulterous body.
Come in.
Morning.
Hi, how do you sleep?
I spent a lot of the night looking out the window.
Well, me too, we could have done that together. You going down to breakfast?
I've had a coffee. I'm not that hungry.
You should eat, Frances.
Anyway, I've got an appointment with Mummy's lawyer at 10.
Shall I come?
No, it's pretty straightforward.
Okay.
After that, I thought I'd go stock up on baby clothes before we go home.
Oh, good idea.
I'm not expecting you to.
I'll tag along if you
it's
want.
It's all right. You're off the hook. You've never been to New York before. Go do the sights.
I hit a deli for a full American breakfast, then hit the mean streets. Then the waffles, hash browns and eggs over easy hit my stomach like a lead weight. Bogart never investigated while sucking Rennies, but I had indigestion and not much time. Steph had found Klinger's business address scrawled on a postcard inside Annie's rough guide to New York. It was all I had to go on, so I stuck out a hand and just like in the movies, a yellow cab screeched to a halt.
Can I go to West 44th and 6th Avenue, please?
The building had seen better days, and the jaundiced janitor was likely to see worse. In the fly-blown lobby, he gawked at daytime TV while a slow fan sliced the thick air.
Excuse me, I'm looking for Danny Klinger's office.
Ain't here no more.
Okay, do you know where I might find him?
What am I, Google? Try Fat Freddy.
Where would I find him?
The Bamboo Lounge, corner of East 43rd and Lexington.
How will I know him when I see him?
He's called Fat Freddy. Go figure.
Ah. Excuse me, Freddy?
Depends who's asking.
A friend of Danny Klinger's.
If you're a friend of Danny's, you'd know my name's Fat Freddy.
I'm also uptight in English.
You don't look like a friend of Danny's.
You don't look fat.
Now that I like. So, you're either a cop or with the IRS.
Well, neither, but I'll buy you a beer in the name of the Anglo-American special relationship.
I got him a drink and squeezed onto the vinyl banquette opposite him.
Yeah, you're the second Brit to come snooping around here lately, but the last one was prettier.
A girl?
A moose. Sure, a girl.
Can you remember her name?
She wanted to talk with Danny, some sort of hack for the BBC, or so she said. Avril? Angie?
Annie.
Yeah. You know her?
Yeah, I met her once. Did she speak to Danny?
He was out of town. Pity, because he was quite a ladies' man, and she was kind of cute.
If Annie and Danny never actually met, then Steph had just lost one of her prime suspects.
So what brings you to New York, friend of Danny?
I want to find out why he wound up dead in a London car park.
Fat Freddy didn't flinch. Word of Klinger's death had clearly reached the stale air of the Bamboo Lounge.
I worked for him, but I worked for a lot of people. I was just a runner.
It was hard enough to imagine Freddie walking, let alone running.
How did Danny get started in the music business?
Yale, then Harvard Business School.
Really?
Get out of here.
Oh.
Danny was a punk from the streets. He knew guys on the hip-hop scene, then hooked up with LB and things started happening. They were outlaws, the James Boys in beanies and low-ass jeans.
I assumed he meant Frank and Jesse James, not Henry and M.R.
Who's LB?
Now that's what the Annie girl wanted to know.
Really?
A lot of people would like to know about that dude. Yeah, he's the stranger from nowhere who rides in from the hills, shakes things up, then rides out into the sunset. All I know is he's a guy who makes stuff happen. Which is fine when it's good stuff. But don't be around for the bad stuff.
What hills did he ride in from?
He walked and talked like a kid from the hood. But I could tell it was all an act and I never bought it.
Sounds like Danny did.
Big time. Why wouldn't he? Now, suddenly business is booming, they're running clubs, promoting DJs, cutting deals, and the money. Every day was payday.
What went wrong?
You roll with the LBs of this world, you gotta expect trouble. And Danny was a small-time hustler, strictly minor league, but LB had his eyes on the prize, which made him dangerous to be around.
Dangerous? How?
There was a dark side. They both had a taste for chemical excess. Danny bought, LB sold.
He was a dealer?
Wholesale. That's what bankrolled the music operation. Suddenly, I'm opening the door to bit plays out of The Sopranos.
Actors?
The mob?
Oh, the mob, right.
But Danny's having a good time, so he turns a blind eye till people start dying.
Well, like mafia hitmen whacking people.
You watch too much Scorsese. Now, kids were frying their brains because LB cut his merchandise with bathroom cleaner and shit.
He sounds like a real piece of work.
You seen The Third Man?
Sure.
He made Harry Lime look like Mandela. When Danny finds out and goes ape, but LB's like, hey, shit happens. So Danny goes into meltdown and LB ups and rides into the sunset, Eastwood style.
LB, the man with no surname.
Danny tried to keep the music business going. Even talked to a British guy about setting up a London operation. But without the drug money to prop things up, the manure hit the aircon and the plane was going down.
From what you say, Danny wasn't the type to kill himself when things get tough.
No way. Klinger was the comeback kid.
The British guy that Danny was talking to in London. You don't happen to recall his name?
Buy me another beer and I might...
Can I get two more beers, please?
Are you sure you're not a cop?
I'm an actor, and no, you wouldn't have seen me in anything.
Jamie. That was his name. Jamie.
After the stress of the funeral, the flight home was more relaxed all round. Francis slept while I drank and tried to make sense out of everything Fat Freddy had told me.
Oh, they're so sweet.
Do you like them? Oh,
they're gorgeous.
As we don't know if it's a boy or a girl, I went for white as a safe bet.
Yeah. Oh, and I got this. It's called Rockabye Baby, and it's supposed to get them to sleep. You push a button and...
Voodoo Child, that's...
Yeah, it makes a change from Twinkle Twinkle Little Star.
Thanks, Dad. That's lovely.
And how's everything been here?
Okay. The builders have done a lot, and Toby reckons he'll be able to repair Mum's bed.
Yeah, she's missed muscle-bound Toby.
Don't be stupid.
And Miles has been in touch.
What? He's got a nerve.
I hope you haven't done anything silly.
He's got legal obligations, you know.
It's fine. Calm down. He just wanted to meet up to talk things over.
He behaved like an arse. What's there to... talk about?
The words pot, kettle and black spring to mind.
Miles is the baby's father, Charles.
Thank you, Mum.
Your father's only thinking of what's best for you.
Thank you, Francis.
We just met for a coffee.
Well, that's very adult and civilised, isn't it, Charles?
Hmm.
Juliet's got to do what's best for her and the baby. Good. Well, I'm still on Eastern Standard Time. I've got to get some shut-eye, so... Night, night.
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 Well, I think I'll turn into...
Oh, Dad?
Hmm?
Just thought you should know, if every relationship counsellor in the country dies on their way to an international conference of relationship counsellors, I still won't be calling on you for advice.
Right.
Night.
Juliet still hadn't forgiven me for missing most of her own childhood or for being pissed at her antenatal class. So I sank a quadruple bells and hit the sack, ready for an early start back on the rep.
I met your future warden at the Athenaeum.
Sorry, Charles, we've got a bit of distort in here, but I wouldn't mind going again anyway. Feels a bit under-energised.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Tom. I think I'm still jet-lagged.
I hadn't seen Tom McLeish since I found out he'd pipped me to the post and spent the night with Steph. Yeah, yeah. Pots and kettles.
Why don't you go and grab yourself a coffee while we're sorting out things in here?
Ooh, yeah.
In need of high-octane caffeine, not the stewed BBC flasks they leave in the green room, I raced to an overpriced, outsourced, in-house outlet.
Two double espressos in one cup, please.
You should take it intravenously and cut out the middleman.
Steph!
I thought you were in New York.
Well, I was, but I'm back.
So I see. Any chance of a chat?
I'm in the middle of recording a classic serial.
How about tonight?
Yeah.
There's a new Lithuanian restaurant in the Goldhawk Road I've been meaning to try. Say, 7 o'clock?
Knowing a little about Eastern Bloc cuisine, I vowed to go for a light, healthy option when we broke for lunch.
Give us a spoonful of egg-fried rice on the side, and a portion of chips, and throw in a roll of butter.
The canteen was packed, so I sat at a cosy table for two with Tom.
How's Francis?
You know, up and down.
Well, at least she's got you around. When it comes down to it, that's what marriage is all about, support through the bad times.
Mm. I'd never win Husband of the Year, but this was rich coming from a man who'd had an affair with Annie and a furtive night with Steph while his wife was away with the kids at her parents.
You're thinking what a bloody hypocrite.
No.
No, yes you are.
Okay, maybe.
You're probably right. But what I had going with Annie wasn't just a sordid, drunken quickie up against the supplies cupboard in the photocopy room after the Christmas party.
The attention to detail told me that Tom was obviously recalling some other romantic encounter.
Well, you don't have to explain yourself to me.
No, something about your face makes me want to confess.
Yeah, you must have a guilty conscience.
What man hasn't?
Such cynicism.
No, just realism.
It's hard for blokes like us to believe, but apparently there are men out there who are faithful to their partners.
Yeah, I've heard tell of such godlike supermen, but they are the stuff of legend. We mortals are driven by a natural instinct to increase the gene pool.
What is this? Darwin's theory of adultery?
I know I don't need to justify my affair with Annie. I suppose what I'm saying is, I'm not the sort of guy who screws anything with a pulse, unlike some I can mention. I admit I'm no choir boy, but Jamie gave Annie a dog's life till she had a good sense to divorce the smug little bastard.
I hear he's leaving. Going to work for an independent.
Good riddance. The Indies' loss is the BBC's gain.
I'd learnt a rat run between Studio 60A and the club, which gave me time for a quick bells before my call, providing I didn't collide with any studio managers thoughtlessly coming round corners.
Oh, mama! Sorry.
Oh, it's you.
Oh.
I gathered up Jamie's CDs and offered to help carry them to a studio.
The Kinks, the Small Faces, isn't this prehistoric to your generation?
Oh, they're for Edwin Palmer. He's into retro chic, you know, garage R&B, 60s Britpop.
70s prog rock?
He draws the line somewhere.
Right.
He's got a broad fan base. Teen to 20s think he's bucking the system and the baby boomers know it's all done with a postmodern ironic wink.
Where would we be without postmodern irony?
Well, that's Edwin's genius.
A greatly overused word.
Hey, you want to stay at the top of the business? You've got to predict the trends to stay ahead of the game.
That's where I went wrong.
Ed's a human chameleon. Master of reinventing himself.
He's certainly ubiquitous.
Oh, he's not that bad.
I mean, he's all over the place. Television, radio.
It's amazing when you think a couple of years ago he was presenting cheesy phone-ins on regional radio and, you know, morphed into Mr. Zeitgeist. You know, this way.
He led me into a small soundproof control booth.
I thought you were back in drama.
Well, I'm just recording some trails for Ed as a favour.
Afternoon, young James. I hear you're leaving us for the fleshpots of the independent sector.
Oh, it's time to join the rat race.
I was chatting with a DG at a Ponzi do last night and warned him if the Beeb don't compete in the marketplace, they'll lose all their top talent.
Well, I don't think they're worried about people like me.
If they invest a fortune in training you, they should be. How do you do, Edwin Palmer?
Charles Paris. Actually, we've met.
Oh, very rude of me. I'm a teller for names and the faces. Remind me.
It was at one of John Christie's steering group committees.
Oh, God help us. Those meetings suck the lifeblood out of you. I'm not what you'd call a corporate man. I show my face, say my piece and bugger off sharpish.
Very wise.
Wisdom itself, that's me. So I'll go through to the studio, Jamie. Get the old bone settled. See you around, Charles.
Yeah.
Right. I'd better get on.
Sure. Oh, I met someone. Said he knows you.
Yeah?
Yeah. Guy called Fat Freddy. Used to work for Danny Klinger.
How'd you meet that loser?
Freddy or Klinger?
I meant Klinger, but...
Well, somebody gave me his number and I was in New York, so I thought I'd pay a visit.
You want my advice? Give that shyster a wide berth.
It's a bit late for that.
What, has he been done for fraud at last?
He's dead.
Jamie's passive face registered neither surprise nor sympathy, just indifference. Through the soundproof window, I saw Edwin Palmer shuffle his notes and sip mineral water.
Did you know Annie had gone out there to meet him?
Well, I heard she went to New York.
You don't know why she might have sought him out.
She was always nicking names out of my address book if she thought there was a good contact. She was fiercely ambitious and always jealous of me professionally, you know, trying to play catch-up.
Strange that Klinger should die in London.
Hey, everyone's got to die somewhere. Oh, for God's sake, who was the last person to use this studio? What if the bloody channels are open?
We can't get the staff anymore.
Jamie didn't laugh, but I caught a smile from Edwin in the studio and took it as my cue to go, leaving Jamie swearing and muttering over his control desk.
You've hardly touched your food.
I'll just sip my Uzbek wine and nibble a dumpling. You said there was something you had to explain.
Not explain exactly, more clarify. Remember I told you Tom stayed the night with me?
How could I forget? I'd been sulking about it ever since.
Well, he didn't stay with me. I mean, he stayed with me, but not with me, if you know what I mean. Why am I telling you this?
I've got a face that makes people want to confess.
There's nothing to confess. Tom turns up at the flat all choked about Annie, so I give him a drink and lend an ear while he bangs on about how upset he is, then segues into how his wife will never understand about him and Annie. Then he turns on the little boy lost act and persuades me to let him crash for the night. Of course, he couldn't resist trying to wheedle his way into my bed, and all he got was a sofa and a duvet.
Do you know, I think I'm getting my appetite back.
Good. The desserts look like they're to die for.
They look like they're to die of to me.
So, how is New York?
Well, I did some research on Danny Klinger.
Fantastic. Mm.
Apparently, Annie tried to arrange a meeting with him, but it never happened.
Oh.
Danny had been in partnership with a hip-hop flyboy called LB. Ring any bells?
None.
He was a drug dealer and freelance wastrel.
Was Klinger into drugs?
Only as a consumer. But when LB pulled out, the cash flow dried up and Danny's music business headed for the skids. That's when he started talking to a British guy about setting up shop in London.
Get a name?
Just one. Jamie.
Jamie? It's got to be Annie's ex.
It is. I've already talked to him.
Then he's our link between the two deaths.
I don't know.
Charles.
He didn't even know Danny was dead, let alone that Annie tried to meet him.
Do you believe him?
He was very upfront about his relationship with Annie, said she was professionally jealous of him.
Jealous as hell, but only because he got that producing attachment to Edwin Palmer, which she knew she could do standing on her head.
Competition, frustration, dissatisfaction. Good basis for a full-on crash-and-burn relationship.
I said she knew how to choose them.
And now Jamie's leaving the BBC for an independent. That's probably what he was doing talking to Klinger, sussing out possible options.
Yeah, but does that give him a motive for killing Annie?
Well, according to Fat Freddy...
Who?
He worked for Klinger, and he reckons LB used the music business as a front for his drug-dealing operation.
You think Annie found out about this?
If I did, she would have done.
Which leaves us where?
OK, what do we actually know for certain?
That Annie died in an editing suite.
That both she and Klinger were drugged first.
OK, if Annie didn't kill herself, who else had a reason to want her dead?
Tom wrote that jealous letter, saying he wouldn't be responsible for his actions if he saw her with someone else.
Annie died in BH, so whoever killed her had to be able to get through security.
Tom and Jamie are both staff.
And they were both in the building at the time she died.
Unless there's a third person.
Do you want another bottle of wine, or shall we move on to vodka?
When in Lithuania.
The television man is crazy, sent with juvenile delinquent Rex.
Oh, oh man, I need TV when I got TV. Rex. Oh, brother, you get it. Oh, you do. Carry the news.
I had a feeling you'd like it.
I'm terribly sorry. Am I interrupting something?
Toby was just showing me some wood.
I was saying how important the feel is.
It's very tactile. Feel that, Charles.
Mmm. It's very woody.
And the beauty is, it's fully sustainable.
Pollack.
What?
Or is it ling?
Why are we talking about...
Fish.
Why is wood like fish?
That's a bit gnomic for this summer night, but I'll have a go if you give us a clue. You be Eunice Stubbs, I'll be Lionel Blair.
Coley!
What?
Another sustainable fish.
There you go. Toby understands me. He's not just a pretty face, a muscular physique, and a PhD in Hector's house.
Bauer house.
That's it. Ooh, is that wine?
I think you've had enough.
I've never been that good with my hands.
Don't put yourself down.
I'm more
cerebral.
He means deranged.
With my artist stroke craftsman's hat on, that's precisely what interests me. The unconscious yet subconscious link between the intellect and the physical.
Mm.
Think about Ghiberti or Cellini and how we now pigeonhole the fine and applied arts.
Yeah, and with your builder's hat on, when will the loft conversion be finished?
Charles, we're very nearly done. That's why I've been showing Frances the veneer for her bed.
You remember the Biedermeier bed you broke when you fell through my bedroom ceiling?
I lost my balance.
Easily done, especially as you get older and your spatial awareness deteriorates.
Yeah. Where's Juliet?
Out with a friend.
Not Miles.
I don't know.
Juliet was telling me how much she liked old-fashioned rocking horses. I hope she won't mind, but I've started making one for the baby.
That's so sweet. Isn't that sweet, Charles?
Yes.
Well, I wouldn't want to impose.
No, she'll be thrilled.
Mm. Well, keep it to yourselves for now. Anyway, I'd better be off. See you in the morning.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Why do you do these things?
What things?
You're like a dog marking its territory.
Thanks a bunch.
Are you so insecure in your masculinity that you have to put down any man you feel is a threat?
I'm not threatened by anyone, and I'm certainly not insecure in my masculinity. There's no worries there, darling.
Accept it, Charles. You're getting older.
So are you.
But I'm embracing
it. By flirting with a sensitive beefcake.
I wasn't flirting.
He was. I'm making a rocking horse for the baby. What's that all about?
A nice gesture?
He's trying to rock his way into your bed.
I'm going up, you silly old sod.
And I'm not old. Methuselah Paris.
Charles?
Oh.
I just picked up a bit of news. Jamie's been rushed to St. Thomas's.
What happened?
All I've managed to find out is that some shelving collapsed in the sound effects prop store and crushed him.
Is he alive?
I don't know. The SM who found him said he was pretty incoherent.
This can't be a coincidence.
I know. I wonder who's going to be next.
Where are you now?
At the flat.
Right. I'm going to give you my address, put some things in a bag and get a taxi over here now.
It's nice of you, Charles, but I can take care of myself.
That's what I'm relying on. Now, get over here and you can take care of me.
In The Dead Side of the Mic by Simon Brett, Charles Paris was played by Bill Nye and Francis by Suzanne Burden. Juliet was played by Tilly Gaunt, Morris by John Glover, and Tom McLeish by Nicky Henson. Steph Kennett was Emily Raymond, Edwin Palmer, Chris Pavlo, and Jamie, Alex Lanipekin. Toby was played by Paul Ryder, the customs officer by Jill Cardo, and Fat Freddy by Gunnar Cawthrey. The Dead Side of the Mic was dramatised by Jeremy Front and directed by Sally Evans. Well, I'm a